Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Vladimir Putin, how does he make decisions? Who does he talk to? That is part of the revelations in a new piece from Foreign Affairs, The Bully in the Bubble. I welcome one of the co-authors of this very helpful essay on Vladimir Putin and his inner circle. Adam Casey is a postdoctoral fellow at the Weiser Center for Emerging Democracies, University of Michigan. He's in Ann Arbor. The co-author Seba Gunitsky is associate professor of political science at the University of Toronto. Adam, congratulations, and I go right to it. The Kremlin is a national security state. It is also a surveillance state. Right now, the national security side is emphasized in Ukraine crisis. You write of the Siloviki. That is the Russian word for the inner circle around Mr. Putin. What is their significance now in making decisions about a man you identify correctly in political science language as a personalist leader, a personalist leader? Good evening to you.
Hi, John. Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be here. I might actually take those questions slightly in reverse. So first of all, when political scientists describe autocratic regimes, one of the most important types of variation they look at is the extent to which power is concentrated in the hands of the particular regime leader. So in Russia, Putin has accumulated a considerable amount of power at the expense of his fellow ruling elites. He rules alone in a way that's much less true of some other authoritarian regimes, such as those ruled by military juntas or single parties. And so Putin runs with a group of people that you correctly identified as the Siloviki, so these people from these kind of power ministries. So this group usually has kind of four main suspects. So Nikolai Petrushev, who is... I'll sort of say their names first, I guess. Nikolai Petrushev, Sergei Naryshkin, Alexander Bortnikov, and Sergei Shoigu. So three of these individuals, Naryshkin, Petrushev, and Bortnikov, came up from the KGB. Putin himself was a former KGB officer who served in most famously in East Germany during the collapse of communism there. And these guys all sort of hold important positions in the security services in Russia. So there are three main security services in Russia, the FSB, the SVR, and the GRU, as well as the FSO, which is the Presidential Security Service. And these men represent most of those services, and they make up Putin's inner circle.
Putin's inner circle. He, however, is a personalist leader. What does that mean? Not for the inner circle, but for how he conducts his affairs. You've mentioned, for example, that he's not reckless, that he's quite cautious. What does that mean in terms of being a personalist?
Yeah, so what matters about his regime being personalist is that it really matters what Putin himself believes. So to understand Russian foreign policy, we really need to understand Vladimir Putin, and that's really hard. It's hard to understand the exact proclivities of this individual, and he matters in an inordinate amount because of the type of regime he runs. We know who members of his inner circle are. I mean, these people come in and out on occasion, right? So Dmitry Medvedev is very much out. No one really thinks Mikhail Mishustin, who's the prime minister, has any kind of serious influence on Putin. And so Putin himself is far and away the most important person. That being said, his inner circle, you know, from their public statements, suggests, you know, they have particularly hawkish worldviews, and they're sort of unlikely to really challenge Putin on whether or not he's making a sort of potentially disastrous mistake. So it really matters who he surrounds himself with, but most importantly, it matters what Putin himself thinks. You know, no one thinks Nikolai Petrushev is making Russian foreign policy. It's sort of all up to Putin.
The metaphor you use in your foreign affairs piece is bubble. So let's go to another well-known personalist leader you mentioned, because he's in the past and it's easier to see him not in conflict zone. This is Saddam Hussein, president of Iraq until his execution. He was also a personalist leader, surrounded by a bubble, I'm presuming. What are the advantages, if there are any, and what are the disadvantages of being surrounded by loyalists?
Yeah, so the primary advantage is they're less likely to oust you. So the consequences of losing power as a dictator can be severe, right? So we're often imprisonment, exile, death. Right? These are things that are real risks for autocratic leaders. They rule through the threat of, or in the case of Saddam, the massive application of violence. And so the consequences of losing office can be really severe. So what Saddam gained by having kind of sycophantic loyalists in his inner circle was, you know, less of a chance of any one of them mounting a coup or removing him, but it came at a considerable cost to quality decision making. So we know now after the war that Saddam badly underestimated the probability of a U.S. invasion, despite increasingly clear signals from Washington that that was likely to happen, and overestimated the willingness of his forces to fight. So the Iraqi military was very famously designed to prevent a coup rather than to fight external wars effectively. But the really remarkable thing about Saddam's regime is that he made multiple disastrous foreign policy decisions that had resulted in huge casualty rates and massive setbacks for Iraq, and their status as essentially a pariah state by 2003, and yet he was never removed by domestic forces. So Saddam had to be, the only way Saddam left power was through foreign invasion, not through the consequences of his disastrous decisions. And so that's what's one particular problem with personalist regimes is they're sort of able to make more aggressive foreign policy decisions or make more mistakes without suffering domestic consequences. Another great example being Muammar Gaddafi in Libya.
Did Saddam Hussein or Gaddafi ever hear a genuine assessment of the risks that he was taking? Or were they both told that things will work out? I want to know how much a bubble matters. And when you see a bubble, are you seeing a weakness in a dictator?
Yeah, so I wouldn't want to make the strong claim that, you know, dictators don't want information. I think the really perverse pathology here is that dictatorships really do rely on good information. They want good information about the intentions of their adversaries and the opinions of their sort of, you know, the domestic population, but they rule atop systems that tend to systematically underproduce that kind of good information. So security agencies are divided because by fragmenting and dividing them, it makes it easier to spy on each other and make sure one of them doesn't sort of launch a coup against the dictatorship. And that division also hampers intelligence collection and analysis. So that fragmentation serves certain domestic purposes that, you know, are kind of rational on the point of the dictator, but also, you know, undermines the regime in other ways. And so Saddam and Gaddafi, you know, by later in times in their regimes, you know, little adverse information did get to them. You know, if you're a, you know, head of a security service in a hyper-personalized autocratic regime, giving bad news also makes you seem incompetent.
Right.
And the consequences of your incompetence or perceived disloyalty can be severe.
What I learned from your essay is that Vladimir Putin of 2022 did not start out this way. There was a period in which he was seeking to transform Russia into a partner with the EU and the United States. What did that look like early on? This is early in the century. Who was national security not a focus for him? Was he surrounded by voices other than the KGB?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yeah, the standard kind of narrative is that, you know, in the early 2000s, he was surrounded by a much more diverse set of kind of perspectives and voices, the kind of Russian liberals and stuff, people who are much more in favor of good economic and political relationships with the West. That being said, he moved really quickly to establish control over the security services. So autocratic regimes, you know, and whether or not Putin was sort of knew he wanted to be an autocrat right away, I don't know that we need to adjudicate that. But autocratic regimes at least require the security services not to move against them. So it's always really important for them to consolidate control over the security services early on. So he did, he pretty quickly elevated a lot of former KGB officials from his time in the service, in the FSB, to prominent positions. But yes, his inner circle was much, you know, was arguably broader than before. Who exactly he listens to more than others, you know, we can't ask him ourselves very easily. So that a little bit of speculation or Kremlinology in the Cold War term is required. But
two events come to mind about Vladimir Putin's leadership. One is when he was at the Beijing Olympics in 2008 and Georgia, the turmoil in Georgia drew him home to Moscow. I believe at the time he was prime minister and not president. Medvedev was a president at the time, but we know that they work uniformly well. The second is 2014 and the decision following the Sochi Winter Olympics to annex Crimea. At those moments, is that Putin in transition, or is that Putin having made a decision that I am a national security leader and not a leader of an economic power?
I mean, I think that Putin is very concerned about the state of the Russian economy because it really does affect his popularity, which he cares quite a bit about. So that being said, I think, you know, these kind of aggressive moves vis-a-vis Ukraine suggest that he is, you know, potentially more concerned with reestablishing Russian power in parts of Eastern Europe than, I guess, the kind of economic consequences of those decisions. So, you know, the seizure of Crimea was, by all measures, quite popular among Russians, a little bit more mixed among the kind of wars in Eastern Ukraine. But yeah, I don't know that, you know, necessarily those two roles are always in tension. I think in practice they end up being in tension, but I'm not sure that.
How about Georgia? Did he get positive responses from the Georgia fragmenting? Because that can be a model for what's happened in Ukraine.
Yeah, it certainly could be. And Georgia wouldn't be the only one. So Moldova is, you know, these are the things that analysts call frozen conflicts, for these kind of breakaway regions that don't end up, you know, kind of formally getting recognized sovereignty by lots of other countries, but end up being kind of de facto independent states that, you know, one argument of Russian foreign policy is that they use these kind of ongoing conflicts as leverage. So I don't know. That's obviously one possible outcome in Ukraine. I would say, you know, we really don't know what he's going to do. And I think what our essay tries to say is that to understand, we really need to understand him. And that's, you know, because of the sort of nature of his regime.
All right. Come to 2022, Adam. We're going to explore now what little we know about this conflict. Because right now there are large military forces moving around on the maps in Belarus and on the Russian frontier along the NATO front line. Adam Casey is a postdoctoral fellow at the Weiser Center for Emerging Democracies, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Seva Gunitsky is associate professor of political science at the University of Toronto. The essay, The Bully in the Bubble, Putin and the Perils of Information Isolation in Foreign Affairs. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.